Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Fast and the Furious. Ja Rule or one, yeah, yeah, it's our world. Please believe y'all ain't real. Please believe it's murder. Please believe INC. Come on, what's touching me? Are you
well? Hello and welcome to this new episode of Missing Frames. We're back, or I'm back, and I am joined by the ever so lovely Mr. John Mills, joining me remotely. This is super. Our technology is just out the wazoo insane.
Well, it's a new thing for Missing Frames. It's a new ground to tread, a new frontier crossed.
A new road to street race down.
Yes, perhaps. Yeah, we're drifting down this road.
This is already the worst episode of Missing Frames ever. But today, so we have a new Fast and Furious movie in theaters now. The Fate of the Furious, I believe it's called.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, it's funny. I can't explain it. I've never had any interest in these movies before. And my wife, Sarah, was bothering me about like, oh, we've got to go see this new Fast and Furious movie. And I was like, when has this ever, you've been with me for about 4 or 5 years now. When did you, like, I've never showed any interest. Why would you think that I would have interest in this? And then the more she ignored it and pressed on and kept saying, we've got to go see it. The next thing I knew, I was like, I suddenly want to watch all these movies. And I thought I'd only seen the first one. So why not make it a Missing Frames episode and just do the entire series? And I'm hoping to include the new one in that as well. Just to let you know, John, and to let the audience know, my exposure to The Fast and the Furious was in high school. It came out in 2001, and I had no interest whatsoever in this. This was not a movie that was made for me. It was not catered to me, but it was like the cool movie that everybody had to see in 2001. And I remember it was summer 2001 and everybody was talking about it. And it was like, you know, all the kids who used to bully me and beat me up were like, you've got to go see this movie. It's so badass. And I was like, well, there's a ringing endorsement to never see The Fast and the Furious. I never saw it in theaters. But a really funny story was right around this time was when DVD started to become a thing. And I think it was late 90s, early 2000s. And I had just gotten a DVD player. And my dad was like, all right, Sean, Ryan's my brother. Why don't you go ahead and I'll let you pick out your first DVDs. And he bought us each our first DVD. To show you the difference between my brother and me, and really the differences between us can be summed up in this single story. The first DVD I ever owned was Tron. And the first DVD he ever owned was The Fast and the Furious. And
there you go.
That was my first exposure to the movie. Similar movies. They both involve racing of some kind at one point or another.
Racing is pivotal to both of those storylines. Very much so.
Even back then, I watched it and was like, I hate this. I hate this. And part of that, I think, was just me being a super nerd and being like, this movie is not at all what I want from a movie. But I also genuinely was like, this is really bad. And I can't believe people like this. And I was 15 years old. I was not at the point where I was making very wise or sound critical analyses. I don't know, whatever you call it.
Yeah, sure.
On movies. Yeah. But even then I was like, this is not my thing. But I'm wondering, when did you see the Fast and the Furious in theaters when it came out, or what was your exposure to it?
No, I was substantially older when the Fast and the Furious came out, but I still had the same similar sort of reaction where I said, I am not your target audience. This is not my thing. And so I just sort of kept my distance from it through the years. And the way it came about was Mike Schindler, who co-hosts Great Shot Kid here on the Nerd Party Network with me. He's been a fan. And we came up on Commentary Trek Stars, our show that was reborn as Stage 9 over on Trek FM Network, studying the works of Justin Lin, in preparation for Star Trek Beyond, because he was, you know, the director of Star Trek Beyond. And as anybody knows, just from Great Shot Kid, what we do is we look at the works of other, you know, other creators, what they've done outside of the realm. So he said, well, you really only have to start with the third one because that's when Lynn comes into the franchise. I said, no, I'm going to start from ground zero. I got to start from the beginning. He said, no, you really don't have to, but okay. He set me up with digital downloads. He's like, hey, I got these old codes. I was like, yes, awesome. Okay. And it's free. And so I watched The Fast and the Furious and I was like, okay, yeah, sure. I mean, it's kind of cheesy, but whatever. And then I watched Too Fast, Too Furious, and I just thought to myself, what? And then, but I was hooked. Like, and I just plowed through, and I just watched them all in quick succession because there's some sort of weird monkey lizard brain part of you that it taps into where just as it keeps going, it's almost like being exposed to laughing gas at the dentist. At first, you're kind of like, you feel a little sleepy. And then you get into it and you're like, yeah, you start breathing deep because you're like, this is great.
That's an amazing analogy. And and just to make it clear to the audience. So at this point, you have seen the entire series minus the latest one in theaters.
I'm going to come clean here. I have not seen 7.
Oh, yet. OK. But you've seen see the majority.
Seven. I have. I've seen up to 6. I haven't seen 7. I'm going to see 7 very shortly because you tipped me off to the fact that the Blu-ray set was for sale 1 through 7 for $30 on Amazon.
Right, which is...
And I said, that's like the cost of a disc. Okay. And even though I loathe physical media, I ordered it and I got it same day so I can watch it because I have to. And the box lights up. Did you notice the box lights up?
I did see that. And to be completely honest, that kind of encouraged me because I was thinking of taking the plunge myself, but I did not really want to watch these movies. And truthfully, one of the funniest things about the series has been watching the critical reception of them, because they were never a critical darling at all. And the first four were pretty much just destroyed. With the exception of the first one, that's the only one that has any level of credibility as far as the first four go. But like, I remember when Fast 5 came out and thinking, oh, here comes another one. And suddenly the tide had turned and critics were on board. Audiences were on board. And I remember being shocked, and friends of mine were like, oh, who cares? It's still stupid. It doesn't matter. But I just remember thinking, this is so bizarre. I never thought this would happen. And since then, they've been pretty well received on both fronts, critically and with audiences. In preparation for this episode, I've only seen the first four, and I wanted to have our before segment only cover those movies. So the point where the movies split from being kind of drag racing, just really bizarre, strange movies to kind of what they are now, which is they have some credibility. They're kind of heist fun, like action movies now. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the first four and kind of go through each one. So I rewatched The Fast and the Furious, and I still hate it. I still think The Fast and the Furious, the first one, is a complete mess. And it was the first time I think I've watched it since I was 15 or 16. And it was such a bizarre movie. And one of the things that struck me the most is Rob Cohen's direction. Now, Rob Cohen hasn't really done anything. I mean, up to that point, he'd done Dragonheart, Daylight, the Sylvester Stallone movie, which I am desperate to see every time I drive through a tunnel.
Why would you be desperate to see
Daylight? Every time, I don't know. I can't explain it, but every time drive through a tunnel, I'm like, oh, that's right. There was a movie where Sylvester Stallone was trapped in a tunnel and I should probably see it. But he also went on to direct Triple X, Stealth, which is, you know, a massive hit, and The Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor, everyone's favorite mummy movie. Though I don't know if there is such a thing as a favorite mummy movie.
Yeah, well, you're leaving out something very key in his filmography, though, which is Dragon, the Bruce Lee story.
You're right. No, you're
which is really
right.
What sort of establishes him. I mean, he had done a lot of TV work and everything. The thing is, Cohen, and this will sound disrespectful, and it's not intended as such, but Cohen is a director as opposed to a filmmaker. He takes a script and he makes a movie. He's not the auteur force of like a young Coppola or something like that.
Sure.
You know,
he's got a workmanlike approach to making movies.
Right, which is not an insult. He is there because he wants to make something that entertains an audience and gets the job done. And I would say that The Fast and the Furious, while it's not my favorite of the series by any stretch, yeah, it's a mess, but since I've gone back and I've seen Point Break now, which was a huge hole in my filmography and everything, but
I still haven't seen it.
There are a lot of callbacks to Point Break in it. Like the story itself is basically a callback to Point Break. And so like Coen movies are very, not Joel and Ethan Coen, but Rob Coen.
let's be specific, right? There.
Totally different things. Are very, I always want to like them. Like I'm sitting there rooting for the movie the whole time. And my impression at the end of it is always, yeah, okay. And yeah. I sort of forget about it. You know, like it kills a couple hours.
Yeah. And that's what's interesting about The Fast and the Furious. Cause the whole time, I as a kid and even now, I was expecting like, okay, well, maybe it'll be cool as far as the racing goes. And there's a couple racing sequences, but they're all so bland. And it's like, okay, the action doesn't really work for me. The characters definitely don't work. That was I don't think that's ever going to be a strong suit of the series. But as far as elements that do work, I mean, Vin Diesel is kind of, he's got natural charisma and he kind of pulls, yep. He has a leading man thing that kind of carries the movie along. Paul Walker does not, and at least in this first one, he is basically wannabe Keanu Reeves, which just brings up even more Point Break comparisons.
Absolutely.
Thoughts. So absolutely. I, watching it again, I was just kind of shocked. I was like, man, it is amazing to me that this kind of took off the way it did. And it's got, I mean, it is wall-to-wall music and literally the yeah. worst kind of music, like the Limp Bizkit, like all the stuff that was like that was the hot music at that time. And that movie feels so much of its time.
You know what, I want you to remember that though, because as we move forward, even from the second one forward, I think that the changing soundtrack of these movies reveals their changing soul. Because when you go back and you have that Limp Bizkit sort of experience, like, you know, we all went through it. We all experienced it.
Sure.
We don't hate it.
I make fun of it, but truthfully, I mean, I was right there with it. And it's as much a painful reminder of myself yes. as it is something I just loathe. But I agree yeah. with you, and we'll definitely even get to that in this portion of the episode as we move through these, because that's something I think you're completely right about. And, yeah, I watched it and kind of was just shocked at how incoherent it was. It kind of jumps around. It's very like one second there, it's Paul Walker is a undercover cop, which they never really fully flesh out. And then the next second it's like, quick, let's go to this big racing contest. And then one of their cool, like the cool nerdy tech guy who's like, you know, the high wired, like supposed to be the skinny nerdy guy, does races and he screws up and he drives off into the distance and he owes some guy money. And then he shows up at the end of the movie as if the writers were like, oh, we've got to write this. We forgot that character. And he right. just gets abruptly killed. And it was so funny to me. And then the movie just ends. Like, it's like, right. nothing is resolved. Paul Walker lets Vin Diesel go. And
spoilers.
And that's it. The movie ends. And Sarah, you know, my wife and I have been watching these together. We just lost it. And we're like, this movie doesn't even have an ending. But it is very clearly geared towards a specific demographic. And that demographic went out in droves, which is what has kept this franchise going.
Yeah. I mean, it went out enough. It tapped into a thing where people wanted to be entertained. The thing that is so weird to me though is then when you get to the second one, it is such a complete shift from what the first one was.
Oh, I like it's shift. I like your use of shift.
No, thank you. Thank you. No, but seriously, right? You come out of the first one, you're like, this is a mess. Where's the ending? What's going on? And Limp Bizkit and all that stuff. And then coming to the second one, and first and foremost, directed by John Singleton. I'm like,
right,
oh, wow,
right.
This is going to have some serious social comment. Nope.
Nope,
no,
not at all. And that
no, it does not.
I remember when we were watching it, And I was like, John Singleton, I know that name. And looking it up, and it's like, Boys in the Hood. Wait, what? Mm-hmm. What is going on here? And, you know, jumping into Too Fast, Too Furious, which I had never seen before prior to a couple days ago, it was shocking. It was, you know, I thought the first one was it was mediocre. It was pretty bad, but never outright terrible. Too Fast, Too Furious is outright terrible. And part of it for me, I hear, well, what do you think? Go ahead before I go on.
I will not defend this movie per se, but I will say that it's so obvious that Singleton showed up. And I mean, by this point, he'd gone through the absolutely horrific, per stories that I've read, experiences of directing the Shaft reboot or update, I should say. Actually, it's a sequel technically, but he, like, supposedly that sort of broke him, like being in the studio, because he, like you said, he did Boys in the Hood, Poetic Justice, Higher Learning, Rosewood, mm-hmm. and then he did Shaft, which was his big budget, like, hey, you've made it, kid.
Yeah.
And that apparently just snapped him. And I've never seen the movie he did, Baby Boy, but then you get to Too Fast, Too Furious. It's so obvious that it is a filmmaker, somebody who is a filmmaker, who showed up and said, fine, I'm just going to do whatever I want to. And he did whatever he wanted to. It was crazy insane. And it doesn't even, I mean, the connective tissue is simply Paul Walker.
Yeah.
There's no other connective tissue.
And they make vague references to, you knew that guy. But those references are through Paul Walker. So, like, you're absolutely right. Without him, there is no connection. And I feel like, and I can't confirm this, I'm not speaking from fact, but I feel like what happened was the Fast and the Furious was an unexpected success. They wanted to make a sequel, Universal, for obvious reasons. They want more money. And Vin Diesel says, great, I want more money. And they say, ooh, no, see ya. At this point, Vin Diesel is not Fast and the Furious, and Vin Diesel were almost a symbiotic. They had a symbiotic rise. The two things became popular because of each other. And as we'll see in the next two movies, this one included, there was a reason why Vin Diesel was a necessary factor to those movies.
Yeah, but also keep in mind that he did Triple X right after Fast and the Furious with Rob Cohen. And so Triple X was a hit too. So to say, you know, Vin Diesel felt like he was a star. He had two hits in a row.
That's true.
He had the right to walk in there and be like, okay, you want me, you got to pay for it.
So I think Universal was then saying, basically they were like, no, you're not. And Vin Diesel, I'm pretty sure, was like, okay, whatever. And they were able to get Paul Walker because Paul Walker wasn't quite Vin Diesel.
Correct.
And that's what they did. But what's very clear to me about Too Fast, Too Furious is that they had no idea what to do with this franchise. They were like, okay, street races and keep doing that, I guess. But at any level of coherency, which is barely in the first one, and as much as I'm knocking the first one had a semblance of a moral center, I guess I want to say, and I use that term loosely, but Vin Diesel and the characters kind of lend it with this sort of, there's something going on there beyond just street racing, or an attempt to do something beyond. Too Fast, Too Furious, by getting rid of Vin Diesel and kind of those relationships and that family aesthetic, just loses it entirely. So it's like, it has nothing going for it.
Well, it's a lot like Nightmare on Elm Street 2. Freddy's Revenge.
That was another. I totally thought the same thing. Yeah,
where it has Freddy and the nightmares, but you're like, no, this isn't what made the first one work.
Right.
You're supposed to build off of what you had, guys.
Sequel,
and this doesn't
a sequel that was rushed out to bank off the success of the first one. You're absolutely right. The two are so similar because they completely misunderstand what it was about the first one. Whatever appeal was there in the first place, they kind of squander it and are like, oh, it was cars. You want more cars. And it's like, it was part of it, but that wasn't
But we did
all
want more Vin Diesel. We really wanted more Vin Diesel.
We really did.
I mean,
and again, what's funny about these first two is, once again, the car races, and even more so in Too Fast, Too Furious, are terrible. Like, and Too Fast, Too Furious, I think, came out in an era where CG action was, like, a real, like, you've got to have lots of special effects. So, to me, they look super fake. Like the car races, and they look even more dated now. But even when I would catch a snippet of this on TV back when it first came out, I remember thinking, like, God, this looks awful. And it doesn't generate any excitement because it's filmed so, like, rapid fire, and it looks so much like a cartoon that I never, again, never felt invested in the action, never felt invested in anything other than the action. And it's like, look, this movie is about the car races, and if those don't work, you're in trouble.
Yes, very true. I think everything about what you're saying is true. I think that pinging these things are true, but I am chomping at the bit, literally chomping at the bit. Well, not literally, but, you know, I don't have a bit, but they have the first one, and then they have the second one, but then they have Tokyo Drift, which is always my question, because Tokyo Drift is an audience splitter too, because I know plenty of people who don't like Tokyo Drift, and then I know people like me who adore Tokyo Drift. And actually, if I remember correctly what I was told, again, by Mike Schindler, Tokyo Drift is the one that people like Quentin Tarantino will show at their like movie night. That's the one from the franchise that they show. I think Tokyo Drift, which is the first one, that's where Justin Lin comes in, is another shift. It's another complete shift from everything that we've known before, because there isn't even any carryover character to this.
Right. Until the very end when you have that little... Well, never mind.
Don't spoil it. Right. No, okay. You kind of...
We're talking... What is this? 2006?
Yeah.
I'm allowed to spoil it. We're over a decade. So, So Tokyo Drift, I will say this. I didn't like it, but what was clear to me, the one thing I did enjoy about it was the car chases. For the first time in the series, and as you mentioned, Justin Lin came in, and it was clear to me, I'm like, okay, this director, just completely separated from what I know about Justin Lin, he knows how to direct the action. Finally, we have somebody who knows how to make these sequences exciting. The problem is I don't care about anything else, and it's clear the series is still struggling to find an identity, but I will give it that much. I think Justin Lin, and as will be evidenced in the later movies too, is the best thing to happen to Fast and the Furious movies, or a pivotal thing to happen to the series as far as a creative standpoint goes. But go ahead. I want to hear you talk a little bit more about your love for this movie, because I truthfully did not like it.
This is what I specifically love about this film. First off, he does in fact bring over the character of Han is brought over from Better Luck Tomorrow, which is an earlier Justin Lin movie. He's confirmed it's the same guy.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is fantastic. And he is also, for me, the heart and soul of really what caused me to love the franchise. I love that actor. I love that character. And having him in there, Han is just so awesome. And to have him in there is wonderful. And yes, the car chases are great. But what I also loved about it, and Lin is really good at this too, is he is, and this is what made him so good for Star Trek too, is he's good at making a social statement without beating you over the head with it, without drawing big glowing arrows to it and saying, this is what I'm trying to say. Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift really works for me specifically because by taking a white character and throwing him into the Japanese culture, it was a brilliant way to deliver the lesson of what it's like to be a minority to an audience that might not have that experience. To somebody who might say, oh, well, you know, people are still cool and everything, and it's like that. But it's still, when you're the only guy in the room like that, you feel that exclusion just by the fact of who you are. And I think that is a brilliant part of this film, is that it really communicates what it's like to be a minority, to be the fish out of water simply by virtue of how you were born. And then the racing is fantastic. And then to have, I'm not saying it's a perfect film. It's not, this isn't like Citizen Kane or
anything
like that.
Well, it is. I mean, but what's interesting is, and I wonder if you, what you think the reasoning is behind it. This is the least financially successful film in the franchise, which is so interesting. And I think the reason is you don't have Paul Walker. you don't have Vin Diesel. That's a double whammy right there. But I also, you know, again, I don't think the film is strong enough to stand on its own terms, which partially contributes to it. But what do you think? I mean, is there, what do you think about it is about this movie? Because if the movie, if we're looking at it on its own terms, why do you think people don't respond to this one like they do with the other ones? Do you think it's just as simple as it doesn't have the stars we recognize in it?
Yeah, I think star power is more important than people realize sometimes, because that's a discussion that constantly comes up about why did you cast this person and not somebody who might be more deserving or better talent? Because audiences do, in fact, now that we've gotten ticket prices where they're $15 and $20, you know, like you got to either have a property that is on fire, like Star Wars. They can cast whoever they want in a Star Wars anthology movie because it's Star Wars, so people are going to go. If you don't have Star Wars, you got to put somebody in there like a Scarlett Johansson or a Robert Downey Jr. You have to put butts in the seats, and this doesn't have anybody in it who puts butts in the seats.
Right.
Not a single name.
No, there's
puts butts in the seats.
Not a name. So they had to rely basically on the specific audience,
alienate by not bringing back anybody that they could
exactly
recognize from the previous two movies. Even if they drop Paul Walker and bring back Jordana Brewster,
yeah,
this movie does better.
Well, Universal figured out that was the problem, and they brought back everybody for the next one, Fast and Furious. And I think, I mean, first of all, it was an incredibly smart decision on their part. It paid off for them. But also, even smarter than that, they brought back Justin Lin. And again, I think this is a young filmmaker. He doesn't have a lot of star power, so they don't have to pay him that much. I think that's part of it. But I think he'd reliably proven that he could direct the car chases. For the first time, we have a good, competent action director here. And I'm not going to lie, Fast and Furious, because, you know, who needs articles when you can just get down and dirty? I actually enjoyed it. That was the first one of the series where, not even ironically, I legitimately enjoyed it. It's interesting because this feels, Fast and Furious feels like it is wrapping up the series up to that point. It feels like they kind of treated it as, okay, this could be the last one, so let's just kind of bring it some closure, have it everything come full circle. And then it kind of paves the way for what I've heard about the later movies, Fast Five, where the franchise went from being like, oh, this kind of sucks, to now it's like the action, one of the big action franchises of this day and age. But something about Fast and Furious, right from the get-go, it sort of embraces the absurdity, which none of the others did. The others kind of took it a little too, like, oh, Tokyo Drift a little bit, but Too Fast, Too Furious was just stupid. And it wasn't self-aware. The first one was like, oh, this is so cool. And I was like, guys, it's really not. But the fourth one, like right from the get-go, there's a crazy car chase sequence. Like a crazy, like they try to rob this truck. And I'm like completely invested in it because it's so well directed.
Which is also great because they bring Han back.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful because, you know, spoilers, If you've seen Tokyo Drift, you're like, wait a minute, Han's back? Fast and Furious is technically, it's a prequel to Tokyo Drift.
Right.
Insane. But it doesn't play with it. It doesn't get obsessed with it. It just does it because, again, this is, I mean, Justin Lin, he is a guy who's in command of it. Whereas you have Too Fast, Too Furious where Singleton's like, F it, I'm just going to do whatever I want to.
Right.
You have Justin Lin who says, this is mine now. I'm going to do what I want to. And he does what he wants to. And Fast and Furious is, honestly, the Force Awakens of the franchise. I've said that elsewhere and previously and everything. This is the Force Awakens of the Fast and Furious franchise. This is the soft reboot where it basically, this is the point where you can jump in if you want to and you don't need to have seen the prequel to have, you know, to have any appreciation for what's going on.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think there is something with any series, no matter how terrible it is, of watching from the beginning. Like, even if you hate it, to get to this point and to, even though I didn't like the first one, seeing Vin Diesel and Paul Walker, I got a thrill out of seeing them together. And it was so weird. And that came partially from having to sit through two movies where they are not together. So even not as a fan of the franchise, I I was really excited by that. But then it was just, I was more impressed by how much fun it was and how, you know, it, again, the movie, this is the first movie of the franchise to kind of bunker down and say, okay, we know what audiences want to see. Let's stop trying to do the drag race plot again. Let's try to have a little bit more fun with it. And for some reason, this movie just has a level of energy to it where I was like, it totally captivated me. And I, what's shocking to me is that this movie, I think, is the lowest rated as far as from a Rotten Tomatoes standpoint of the entire franchise.
And I think it's because it's a soft reboot.
I think that's part of it. I don't think people were ready. The critics were not on this franchise's side. They were ready to dismiss it from the get-go. And they, it feels like there's a level of confusion. Like, wait a second, now it's just ridiculous. And it was kind of, for me, I'm like, that's awesome. But I guess the critics hadn't caught up at this point. They do by the next one.
Yeah. Well, I think that there's also the fact that the first three definitely treat the drag racing and the street racing and everything as bad. This is an aspect of a bad subculture. This is what, you know, the fourth one recasts everybody. The whole point of it is to make it so that people are virtuous. They're doing these things for Robin Hood-esque sort of reasons. They're not the bad guys anymore. In the first one, they're the bad guys. In the second one, they're the bad guys. In the third one, you know, they are, like, there's smuggling going on and there's drugs and there's drifting and there's danger and all of that stuff. Yeah. And then the fourth one, this is basically the James Bonding of it, where they're like, no, they're doing bad things, but it's for good reasons. And so that's okay.
Exactly. And that's the vibe I got from it is, like, they're action stars, but they're action stars with motivations. Like, Vin Diesel wants to get revenge, for his murdered girlfriend, and Paul Walker has a stake in it because he wants to be a part of it. And he wants to get back into that world. It's just,
I can't wait for you to see 5 and 6. I really can't.
I can't wait. I'm not going to lie. Nobody really talks about Fast and Furious. So I was kind of like, oh God, here we go. I have to get through this one, but I genuinely enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And
I'm glad
actually genuinely excited to see Fast 5. And the rest of this franchise. And so let's go ahead. And at this point, I think we're going to break and we're going to watch the rest of the movies and reunite to talk about them. And but at this point, go ahead. And how would you rank the series so far?
OK, if we're taking it where we're just looking at 1 through 4 and that's it.
Yes.
OK,
that's it.
Then Tokyo Drift, number 1. Fast and Furious, number 2. The Fast and the Furious, number 3. Too Fast, Too Furious, number 4. And I think that Mike Schindler's head exploded if he's listening to this. How would you rank these?
I pretty much the same, except I'd put Fast and Furious on the top. And I think I liked The Fast and The Furious maybe a little bit more than Tokyo Drift. But Justin Lin's, I know. Well, Justin Lin's direction impressed me way more than Rob Cohen's. I was more excited by Tokyo Drift than The Fast and the Furious, so it gives it an edge there. But I missed kind of the I don't know what I missed from the first one. Maybe I'm gonna, you know,
that,
what? I'll do
that's
Fast and Furious.
At the end. Come on.
Fast and Furious, Tokyo Drift, The Fast and the Furious, and then Too Fast, Too Furious. I think that's unanimously considered.
I can
worst
live with
one.
That. I can live with that.
Okay, great. So on that note, we're gonna go watch the rest of the franchise and we will return to discuss it and see how our final rankings go and how I feel about the rest of the series.
Awesome.
Now available to own on video cassette.
All right, we are back. We have now seen the remainder of the Fast and the Furious films, and I guess let's just pick it up with Fast 5, John, which never seen before. And I really enjoyed Fast and Furious, and Fast 5, which is also directed by Justin Lin, and is basically the template for the rest of the series so far.
It absolutely is. This is, I think, Fast Five is frequently cited by a lot of people as their favorite of the series. And I think it's because, and I'm borrowing a phrase from Mike Schindler, another host on the network, he hacked the Gibson. He figured it out. He knew what was going to work best. And I think this is the moment where it becomes, now other directors are going to come in, of course, but it becomes Lin's series. He makes this his with Fast Five.
He cracked the formula, really, I think, with Fast and Furious, but Fast Five is the refinement of it. And I will go ahead and, not to spoil my ranking, but I will go ahead and agree that this is my favorite of the series. Everything about it works. It took them a while to get there, but it's fun. It's exciting. The formula just works. I mean, they bring back everybody. You've got Ludacris, Tyrese, you know, and Han comes back full-fledged as a team member. They bring everybody back. And it's so funny, these characters, like Tyrese, I couldn't have cared, what is his name, Roman? I couldn't have cared less about him in Too Fast, Too Furious, but seeing him, he's perfect. I mean, from this point on, the team aesthetic just works, and that's what it was missing. And they bring in Dwayne Johnson as Luke Hobbs, and I loved every second of it.
And let's be perfectly clear that we are very much on the same train that the rest of creation is, which is just add The Rock and everything becomes instantly better.
It's true. Add The Rock to the formula. And I've been watching a lot of movies where The Rock plays against type. Terrible, but the last movie I saw him in was Moana technically, but he's kind of, you know, fun, and Central Intelligence was terrible. But you know, it was bad. But he's kind of a goofy, like, he's still sort of beating people to a pulp, but he's kind of like, oh, I'm so sweet and stuff. So to see him kind of go full on tough guy in Fast Five is so entertaining. And he's just a total BAMF. Like, he's like, his one-liners are hysterical. And it is insane to think that the series has gotten to this point. But I mean, the car chases, the family aesthetic, really, I'm not going to lie, I kind of choked up a little bit when what's her name? Jordana Brewster told Paul Walker that she was pregnant, and Vin Diesel comes in and he's like, our family just got a whole lot bigger. I was like, this is so sweet. And that was, I mean, the fourth one kind of started to delve into it, but the first three were really missing just those touching human moments, because they were trying too hard to be like, oh, it's cool, it's about street racing, and we're so edgy. This is the first time, or go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, like, in the first one, there's the family thing, but it's very obviously to give Vin Diesel that extra dimension so you don't think he's just a street tough. You know, it's to say he's a human being, you know, like that aspect is added to him in the original, The Fast and the Furious. And I think that with him coming back into the series, full-fledged in 4, I think that there's very much more of a controlling hand. And you're right that the focus does go to family, you know, and family.
Right.
What really works about it for me with the whole family thing is your true family, when you get older, are the people that you stand with and who stand by you. It's not about blood anymore. It's about the people that you love because you choose to love them.
Exactly.
And I think that's really what takes root in Fast Five. And I go back and forth. My love for the third one, I don't know if it can ever be overcome, but I completely acknowledge why people choose Fast Five as their favorite of the series. Because I think you're absolutely right that everything fires in this. There isn't a single moment where you're like, did they really? Everything just comes at you, and Lin is in complete command of every one of his faculties here. And
absolutely. Everything
just comes together.
Yeah, it's insane. And I kind of watched these all in a row, so I'm trying to kind of divide them out and figure out, wait, what happened in which one? Which is kind of almost, that sounds like a backhanded compliment, but it's just because I had so much fun with these, and they are so similar as far as the formula and the kind of vibe they're going for. But that, the chase scene at the end of Fast Five, when they are dragging the vault, is pure movie magic. Like, it is action movie It's just action cinema at its finest, and it is so much fun and so ridiculous.
Yeah, and it doesn't hide it. And the thing is, what I was thinking while revisiting the series, what really stuck to me was you want to apply like a certain franchise, like you always want to compare it to another franchise. Like, oh, Star Wars is really popular, but no, it's not quite Star Wars. And Star Trek, well, this is definitely not Star Trek. What this is, minus, of course, the family, this is Bond in a sense.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Every movie that you come to. And so I don't think it's a backhanded compliment for you to say, well, I just watched them all in a row, and so I'm trying to keep straight what happens in which one. If you watch, you know, Sean Connery, Roger Moore, and Timothy Dalton, like, in a row, and Pierce Brosnan, like, you know,
it all starts to run together.
Which happened in that? Wait, no, was that the bomb in the sub, or was it the Greek island? You know, like, you start, I still screw up Bond titles, because I'm like, I'm not quite sure what happened. I mean, it takes the really bad ones to jump out at you in that.
Yeah,
series.
And it's a great comparison, and a lot of people have brought that up, but I think, quite frankly, and this is no disrespect to the James Bond films, because they've been fantastic, minus Quantum of Solace, and I enjoyed Spectre, but it wasn't quite the high that Casino Royale and Skyfall were. But those have kind of, those movies are still unquestionably James Bond, but with a more serious slant. The Fast and the Furious movies from Fast 5 on are giving me everything I want that the Bond series is not, that the Bond series can't. It's adding the ridiculous camp factor of Roger Moore and even Sean Connery, but with genuine heart. Like, the Fast and the Furious movies no longer feel cynical to me, or like they're trying to be super cool. There's a lot of heart to them, and they're giving me what I want from that the Bond series currently can't quite give me, because it's a little too grounded right now. It's giving me that ridiculous action with characters that are essentially unharmable superheroes.
They absolutely are, because another thing I was thinking about was, and when you get to, I mean, when you get to six, like, it totally jumps out at you, like, this really is a comic book franchise.
Oh, absolutely.
This is really what we mean when we say comic book franchise. And I think that when you say comic book franchise, most people are going to think of Marvel. And this has helped me understand why Marvel is more popular than DC right now, is because DC is where Bond is right now, where it's a comic book movie, but it's taking it very seriously and grounded. And sometimes it can work, like Skyfall really works. But sometimes you just want what you like. You want, you know, what works for you. You don't want your sandwich on a different type of bread. You want your sandwich. And that's what you paid for, and that's just what you want.
Yeah, and the Fast and the Furious, I mean, the series and the creative team involved made an excellent creative decision when they decide, we're going to carve out this niche for ourselves because nobody else is doing it, really. And they have totally owned it. And Fast and Furious 6, I enjoyed probably just as much as Fast 5. You know, they kind of bring in Gal Gadot a little bit more. She plays a bit more of a prevalent part. And I loved that The Rock is now working with them, which is just great to have him. The more Rock, the better. And the action is insane. Again, they have that highway bridge chase scene. And when Vin Diesel, they bring back Letty. So Michelle Rodriguez is back. Mm-hmm. And the completely absurd and goofy plot line of she's lost her memory, which is just so funny, but they completely go with it, and it works because all the characters are, nobody's winking at the audience. It's completely genuine.
Well, and the thing is, what I realize is what really, really makes Letty's plot line work, and the amnesia is ridiculous, but it gives them an excuse for somebody who's coming in to Furious 6 the first time they get there. If it's their first one, this is their entry. It's like, oh, fine. I've heard people talking about these for 5 movies. I'm going to go see 6. Letty's plotline gives them an excuse to revisit things without making it forced exposition.
Right.
Without making it be, they're driving along, hey, remember when we were racing down and you met Roman and I wasn't in the movies? Like, they don't have to do that. It's through a character that they bring the past back to life. And I think that's what completely works about it.
It does. And I, like we've both admitted, it is silly, but it kind of works. And, you know, I love the way Dom tries to reintroduce her to this world. It comes in a little bit more into play in the 7th one.
Yeah.
And the 6th one, she's kind of their enemy. and they kind of bring her back over. But again, they continue to top themselves action-wise, and that the finale of the airplane chase, yeah. Where Gal Gadot sacrifices herself, and it's
spoilers.
Horrible and sad. Yeah, spoiler alert. It's insane. The way she does it, it's insane. She sacrifices herself to save Han. So basically she lets go and she's falling away. It's a high speed chase down the airplane track. And as she's falling into the darkness, she pulls out a gun and shoots the guy who's about to kill Han.
Right.
So she sacrifices herself in a really ridiculous action way. But then his reaction afterwards is very moving. And
it is.
Again, every ridiculous thing that happens in these movies, and if I'm going to knock them for anything, it's that, you know, they're pretty much all unstoppable. You know, Vin Diesel will.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he never breaks a bone. He barely gets a scratch.
The Rock punches through walls. Exactly. Literal walls.
Exactly.
Not metaphorical ones. Concrete is nothing to him.
Yeah, and
like I've accidentally punched walls before. Like when like sparring or training or something like that. It really, really hurts.
Well, you're not Dwayne Johnson, John. That's the whole point.
That's an excellent point. I can tell you that if somebody built like Dwayne Johnson, like the thing is, the fight scenes are great and everything, but if you really apply realism to it, if somebody built like Dwayne Johnson delivers a well-formed punch at another human being, it's collapsing something. There's no sort of like, ow, that hurt, I'm going to hit you back. It's boom. I can't breathe.
Right. I do love that. You know, Luke Evans is the bad guy in this movie, and he's good. He's serviceable. It's kind of forgettable. Yeah. He's basically there to be the Bond type villain. But he does a good job. But it's so funny to see like Vin Diesel take out everybody, and then Luke Evans, who's like well built, but he's not Vin Diesel, because he's the bad guy. He has to be a formidable physical foe, and suddenly
he's the boss
Vin
level.
Diesel's like, oh no, I'm gonna be beat by Luke, and it's like, come on now. We saw Vin Diesel literally leap across a bridge and catch Michelle Rodriguez and fly into a windshield of a car and just kind of like, you know, brush his shoulders off and just be like,
I'm gonna
okay.
have a bruise tomorrow.
I know. Well, probably even not. He might just wake up with like a slight headache. That's it.
Yeah, right. But I mean, he's a little dehydrated.
That Furious 6 kind of fully embraces that. And then it has a fantastic teaser with Jason Statham coming into the
kidding?
Mix.
Are you kidding? That stinger at the end, and I think I actually said this to Mike Schindler, because he's the one who got me into the series to begin with. I think I actually said via text or whatever that stinger made me instantly hate Jason Statham and say they better just absolutely wreck his world.
Because
to tie him in to the I lose track of all of the spoilers, but to tie him into the departure of a beloved character retroactively, I instantly hated him in a heartbeat. I hated
him. It was you immediately introduce him as like he's already a stronger villain than Luke Evans, because there is something personal in there, and Luke Evans kind of, there's a bit of a tie with Michelle Rodriguez, but you don't really get the sense that he has done something to really hurt these people. And Jason Statham comes in, and it's like immediately he's like, you don't know me, but you will. And he kills. It shows that he played a part in killing. And again, full spoilers. He played a part in killing Han in Tokyo Drift. And you're immediately like, oh, this is going to be good. This was also Justin Lin's last Fast and Furious movie, number 6. And I think he went out on a complete high, and, it was sad to see him go, but you have to love him for what he did and what he helped turn this franchise into.
Well, the thing is, I can completely understand his departure, because Fast 5 structurally is a bit leaner. I think that the only thing you can really come at 6 with is technical quips.
Yeah.
You know, this is too long, this goes on a little bit, the villain isn't as strong.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that sort of stuff. And I think that with 6, it is not a bad movie. It's a great movie, especially in the series, but you can definitely tell, like, I could understand why a director would would do 5 and 6 and then look at it and say, I don't know what else I can possibly do with
yeah,
this.
Yeah, yeah. You do get that sense. Because 6, like you said, it's a little bit more bloated. And I do, I mean, he'd done, this was his 4th film in the franchise. And I feel right. like at that point, you just have to kind of stop and say, you know, I can't offer anything fresh to this anymore. I've done my due diligence. So with number 7, they bring in James Wan, who yes. wasn't an action director. He'd done The Conjuring, Insidious. So he was a horror movie director.
Yeah.
And this is basically his first big action film. And as everyone knows by now, this production was also marred by the death of Paul Walker. And
yeah.
I want to take a moment here to give some love to Paul Walker, to give a lot of love to Paul Walker. In
Same
the
here.
In the first half of the episode, I'm very dismissive of him because he in the first 2 films, especially, he doesn't get a chance to demonstrate really anything because the first 2 films are pretty weak. But in the 4th one onward, I love him and I love his character and he's given more to play with. And I just want to stress first and foremost, just to counter my dismissiveness in the first half of the episode, that he is missed. And I really loved seeing him really get his due as a performer. And again, he's not like the greatest actor of all time, but he really does get to play with more and he gets to be more in these movies. And go ahead.
Oh, sorry. What I was going to say was that like with 7, I think that because I had not seen 7 when we
right.
recorded the first half of this.
So we're now on the same page.
I've seen 7 for the first time now because, you know, I'm going to see 7 before I see 8 sort of thing. Although, honestly, I mean, the way this series works, do you really need to? No, but it helps. I think that what it is, what I put my finger on was Paul Walker wasn't the greatest actor of all time. No, but Paul Walker's chemistry with Vin Diesel was so genuine,
mm-hmm.
was so incredibly authentic that you believed that these, and they really were in real life, they were good friends.
Yeah.
You believed that this friendship, this love between these brothers was real,
yeah.
that they actually cared for each other very deeply. And I won't lie, I wept like a baby at the end of Furious 7.
Yeah.
Because
I mean,
it was amazing.
The tribute at the end was extremely moving. I'll knock it just for having the kind of corny pop song in there that was basically like, we'll meet again. You know, it was just like, okay, it's a little on the nose. But,
I'm all right with that.
But the content itself is so moving that it was a very fitting tribute. And I have to give this production team and James Wan especially, this is his one and only film in the franchise so far, mm-hmm. his first big action film, and to have something like that come into your production is insane. I can't imagine how stressful it must be and how emotional and how devastating it must be to not only have to look at it from a personal standpoint of this was a friend and a family member to me. But now we have to keep going. We have a movie we have to make, and
yeah.
we want to honor his memory by completing it. But also, we just have to complete it in general.
Right.
And Furious 7 is of these 4 from 5 through 8. I think it's probably my least favorite. Not to knock it, I still enjoyed it, but it was the first one to me where I was kind of like, I loved elements of it, but the overall picture was a little tiring for me.
Okay. No, I think that's a fair thing.
It's the highest rated from a Rotten Tomatoes standpoint. I think it has a 79%. Even though the consensus is that 5 is the best, 7 is the highest rated. Which again, I think I liked 5 and 6 more.
I think that the tribute to Walker is what kicks it in, I mean, forgive the turn of phrase, kicks it into overdrive for a lot of people.
Sure.
Because
and it contributed to the box office as yeah. well. You can see, I mean, Fast 5 and 6 made like, what, 600 to 800 million worldwide. All of a sudden, Furious 7, $1.5 billion worldwide.
Yeah, but the thing is, what I really like about what they did with the tribute at the end is they took the opportunity with Paul Walker's death to use it as a way to emphasize and like the, I don't intend this to be like, it's going to come out weird, but to emphasize that they are serious when they are talking about their themes, the importance of family,
yeah,
and the importance of love and sticking together, and not, it's not goodbye, I'll see you later. Like,
yeah,
there's a very genuine, it's a genuine note of farewell while at the same time being a genuine note of love and joy about the time spent with somebody that you lost unexpectedly. And
yeah,
the thing is, I can't help but think about the situation that the Star Wars franchise is now in with Carrie Fisher's unexpected death to, you know, it's such an awkward place to be. And what they did here was eulogize him without sacrificing his legacy with sort of like a cheap, you know, tribute.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't rewrite the ending and have him go out in a blaze of glory so that he was dead on screen too. They let you walk out of the theater with the character intact, but knowing that he's not coming back.
Right.
Like, they gave him the right kind of farewell that a character of long standing should have, as opposed to saying, oh, let's just end the character. You
yeah
know, like, I think that's an important, hopeful undercurrent. I think that's probably why people respond, you know, on Rotten Tomatoes so strongly to it, is that's what you want. Like, that's the point of a eulogy.
Yeah.
Is to say, hey, it's all right, man. We're going to keep moving.
Yeah, I love the visual of, you know, they, at the end, he and Paul Walker and Vin Diesel,
yeah,
are driving, you know, they're driving side by side, and then Paul Walker kind of takes his exit and he goes off. I love that. I mean,
in a white
like
car.
You said, yeah, exactly. It's,
yeah,
I mean, obviously the visual is a little on the nose, as is the song choice, but it's so genuine. Again, it's so genuine and extremely moving. Seven as a whole, though, I love the action in it. I love the
yeah
action more than I love the in-between stuff. You know, the first scene in the movie, Jason Statham's introduction in this film, of that one-shot sequence of him coming down the elevator and everything's exploding, that's
mm-hmm
just great filmmaking, and it looks amazing. And the whole them skydiving with their cars is great. And
yeah,
Paul Walker climbing up the bus as it's falling off the cliff. It's just...
And the car vaulting between three buildings.
Yes, exactly.
Is just pure insanity.
It is pure insanity, but it's so exciting, and I love all of it. And again, it's insane to see how they keep topping themselves with the action. Seven, I liked. I don't think I loved it as much as the others, but again, it's a solid action film. So.
See, for me, I did enjoy it as much as the others, but I'd be lying if I said it wasn't, you know, motivated at least partially by that ending. I might rewatch
yeah
it in the future and be a little bit harder on it, but just I do think the ending really, I mean, you can't undervalue a good ending. You really can't.
Right.
So,
absolutely.
And you know, that definitely plays into it. So that brings us to the culminating point for now.
I'm not gonna lie, I was very bummed walking out of the theater for Fate of the Furious, because I was like, there's no more, what am I gonna, I guess I'll just have to start over and just watch it all again. But
right.
Yeah, this is my first Fast and Furious movie that I've seen in theaters.
Same here.
So John, what did you think of the Fate of the Furious, and are you just as amazed at the cleverness of the title, F8 equals Fate?
Oh,
brilliance. Just sheer brilliance.
You know what? I was very happy because they broke their naming convention with Furious 6 and then Furious 7. I was like, oh.
And they're getting lazy.
Right. But then they had Fate of the Furious. Like, as soon as they announced the title, I was like, oh, nailed it. Yes.
I will say, right. I wish they kind of pulled a fan four stick and put the 8 in the title and all the advertising, the Fate,
yes,
even the title on the screen. They should have had F8, because I was like,
I agree.
Just embrace it. Just embrace it at this point.
Just go for it. But I will say that, yes, I'm gonna come at it from two angles. One is the experience itself. And I said this to my wife when I got home. I said, what was amazing about it was, again, to draw the franchise comparison, everybody loves to talk about Star Wars or even track it. It's like, oh, now I'm going to see it with my kids. Mm-hmm. And they're having a great time with everything. And that's well and good. But in terms of diversity of audience that I've been in, this was legit. I saw people of every age range, up to from older than me to tweeners.
Yeah.
Every race, everything in the theater, and everybody sitting down. Like, it reminded me, in all seriousness, of going to football games when I was a kid, when tickets were affordable.
Uh-huh.
And sitting in there, and you saw everybody from every walk of life get together, joined by a unified cause. And I thought that for that, like, I couldn't help but look around and be like, this is kind of beautiful, man. This is something that speaks to everyone.
I had a very similar experience. My wife and I went and saw it, and the theater was packed. And again, you look around, and it's amazing. We're all there celebrating this franchise for completely different, everyone has a different connection to this. But I looked around and just saw, you know, there's like the skinny nerdy guys, there's, yep, the fat nerdy guys, there's, you know, black, Asian, kids, you know, every walk of life is there. And there aren't, it's funny, I mean, this franchise in particular seems to celebrate diversity in a way that is not obnoxious or annoying, and in a way that is extremely satisfying. I feel like a lot of films are like, oh, hitting you over the head with, oh, diversity, diversity, diversity.
Right.
The Fast and Furious franchise has done it without calling attention to it. And I love that.
Right. It creates characters that are wonderful, that do speak to a whole ton of people without, at no point have I felt like the producers or the director have stopped and said, hey, look, this,
yeah,
you look, know,
at this,
like,
tough woman, look at this, like, this black guy who is, you know, like,
right,
it's just what it is, which is what I want out, right, of every movie. And we're in a time where diversity is like now a requirement that you have to check off. So I feel like,
yeah,
this franchise,
Fast and Furious franchise was doing it well before anybody else was talking about it.
Exactly.
And it did it without fanfare.
I think what's even more so than Star Wars, which, you know, now has the white woman, the black male, you know, it's like, yeah, going down now, the Asian woman in Episode 8, it feels like it's going down a checklist. I feel like this franchise does not get enough credit for doing that.
I completely agree with you. Now, to move on to the movie itself,
right,
keeping the Star Wars references going here, I think that it suffers a little bit from Rogue One syndrome, mm-hmm, in that the beginning is a little bit messy, with some flashes where you're like, okay, yeah, we're coming alive now. All right, we'll get there.
Yeah.
And then the ending is so crazy, edge of your seat fun, that my initial reaction, I walked out, I was like, that was great. And then as I thought about it, I was like, well, yeah, the beginning's a little choppy. Maybe we could have gotten to this thing a little bit faster. But
and furiouser.
Yes, a lot more furiously. But what really makes the movie work for me and truly, truly enjoy it is I have to give a special, special note of praise to Charlize Theron, because I thought she was a terrific bad guy. I thought she played the role really well. And the whole time I was watching her, and I promised your wife on Facebook that I would drop this here on this show. I was watching her, and it was the first performance I had seen from an actress where I said, you know, if they redid the Joker as a woman, I could see that now, because,
oh, wow,
that's what she struck me as. I looked at her and I was like, I could see the Joker here.
See,
somebody who just wants to burn the world.
Yeah. I liked Charlize Theron. I thought she was fine. I think I'm a little, the whole hacker angle is a little silly to me. It almost feels outdated in a way when people throw that into a movie.
Wait a minute, but you're talking about on the Fast and Furious team. Yeah. There's a hacker who created the Eye of God,
right?
Or I'm sorry, God's Eye, that can use every camera everywhere to track anywhere somebody is. And in this movie, is used to find that Vin Diesel is standing outside the door. Where are the cameras in that hallway? Where are the cameras in that hallway? How did that work?
Did you get...
But then you're going to come back and you're like, but Charlize Theron's hack... The simple fact that they had her in an airplane, which can't be intentional, but made me actually think of the book, less so the movie, Contact by... Carl Sagan, yeah.
Yeah.
Because that was how one of the magnates got around international law, was he just kept flying. He was flying. Right. In the book, he was in space. And in the movie, he was flying in a plane that never touched ground.
Yeah.
And like, I watched it. I was like, wow, that's actually familiar to me as a sci-fi fan. I kind of like that.
I mean, I like it. It always feels a little, whenever like somebody brings up social media or like hacking or surveillance, it always feels a little obvious to me. It's like, yes, we are trying to be relevant. But I liked Charlize Theron a lot in this movie. I thought she was a good villain. And again, we're going full spoilers here. There are hints that she could return in the future, which I think could be fun.
Now, wait a minute. That's not a spoiler from any. You in this movie franchise, you can literally see somebody die and have a funeral. And at no point does that mean the character can't come back.
Right.
Like there's, I mean, after Tokyo Drift, the idea of Han being in a future film is crazy. And then they're like, nope, it happens beforehand. Oh, all right. That's fine. And I'm fine.
Well, you know, they're talking about Han is going to, they're hinting at future films where Han will be prevalently discussed and potentially returning. And that brings up my next topic of conversation, which is Jason Statham's character. It is great to have him in the mix now as one of the teammates, and he has a truly just joyous action scene in this movie.
That scene had me laughing so hard.
Oh, it's so good.
Like, he's so charming in that I actually, like, Jason Statham is always somebody I've enjoyed, like, what he's done. And I've enjoyed Transporter. I enjoyed, you know, all of the stuff that he's been in. I, of course, enjoyed him in Furious 7. This is the point where I became a Jason Statham fan, because I was like, you know, he really just, that's just an easy charm that guy has, and I really enjoyed it.
And I was very excited to see him as part of the mix. And but afterwards, Sarah, my wife, got very upset, and she went on a rant, and she said, "How can they make us like Jason Statham? He killed Han. I hate him. Why are they all friends now? He killed one of the best characters." And I said, "Sarah, it's because the filmmakers needed a reason to make us really hate him in the sixth one or the seventh one. And now they want us to like him. And that's all there is to it. Just don't think about it."
Right. It is all there is to it. And I instantly hated him at the end of six because of the way they introduced the character. But then they have the dialogue between him and Dwayne Johnson where, you know, it's like, so, you know, you got a high decoration for a traitor. And he's like, well, you know, but I mean, essentially it boils down to he was defending his family.
That's what I said. I was like, look, in the sixth one, he's attacking because they attacked his family. So now he is going to get back at them. Wasn't personal. It was just business.
And
it's unfortunate that Han had to be the casualty of that. But we also had to figure out how to. Well, yeah, exactly. But also, I mean, Han dies eventually. We had to figure out how to tie it all in together.
Right.
And kudos to this team who have found a way to retcon everything in a way that feels completely normal and natural. I Fast and Furious 8, or Fate of the Furious, as we were walking out, I was like, I just can't wait to go back to the beginning of this franchise and remind myself of where it came from, because these are now James Bond movies.
Yes, and this is another thing I want to call out is, like, I you know me, I loathe physical media as a rule. I trumpet that nonstop everywhere that I can. I hate physical media. I want all digital. However, you tipped me off to the set where it was like the first seven for $30, and I was like, and that's pretty good, you know, and it had, okay, fine. Oh, look, and the box lights up. The packaging for the quote unquote complete collection is like, when I first opened it, I was like, yo, man, this is kind of going to be outdated as soon as, you know, Fate of the Furious. Like, what am I going to do? I guess I'll just have it. And they have a sleeve
for the eighth
one with a cardboard disc that says reserved for Fate of the Furious, and I'm like, guys, come on, love your fans hard.
It's great. And James Bond did something similar with Skyfall, where I have the Bond 50 set, and they had a spot reserved for Skyfall. And it's the dilemma of any person who collects films, like when you get a quote unquote complete set, you know it's not complete. You know there's going to be more. But I love that that's something that people are introducing now. Like, it's like, here's a spot for the next film in the franchise.
Right.
I think it's great. So real quick, just talking about Fate. So F. Gary Gray is the director of this, of Straight Outta Compton, and I can't think of anything else he's done off the top of my head.
The Negotiator, and I believe, and I just talked about this with Schindler, but I believe Friday, actually. The Ice Cube Chris Tucker
classic. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yes. No, you're right. He did that, and The Italian Job, which I think is where he kind of cut his action teeth. Like, he directed that.
Yeah, I haven't seen The Italian Job, but I was a huge fan of Straight Outta Compton. I thought it was an absolute masterpiece.
Yes.
And Friday was a movie that I enjoyed more than I should have.
So what do you think? What do you think Gray brought as a director to this franchise for this one? Because it's like it is very like it is on the tracks. It is already moving in a direction.
Right.
You have some constraints as far as what you can do with it. What do you think it was that he brought to the table this time around that made this unique?
Honestly, I think that what I can do best is compare Juan and Gray and say that what one of the strengths I felt with this was that I felt that the character introductions flowed a lot better. I couldn't help but think of how many characters he juggled with Straight Outta Compton, and then looking at it here and saying he really juggles the characters well here.
Yeah.
No character feels forced or wedged into a situation. And even something where initially in the beginning I was like, what is the point of this scene? And then they tie it together at the back end of it. And I'm like, oh, wow, that was really clever. You brought it all together in one moment. It was a little choppy with, you know, the way they handled Statham's character at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that he brought a streamlining to how the characters interacted.
I think if there's one thing Furious 7 suffered from, it kind of the in-between scenes between the action were not as strong. And with this one, you get the sense that Gray kind of really understood the ensemble, what the strength of the ensemble was, and he kind of brings character to the forefront. So you have a lot of really great moments. I think Tyrese and Ludacris in this one are great in all of them, but I'm amazed. It takes a lot for Tyrese is basically playing like the what could be a cliched comic relief character, but he is so good and he's so genuine, and Gray really gives him a lot of great moments to shine.
I was going to say it's very obvious who Gray's favorite character of the ensemble is, because Roman really gets a chance to shine in this.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas before he was, like you said, comic relief and everything. Whereas in this one, I was getting some legitimate belly laughs. I have to find out. I have to see the behind the scenes stuff. But I feel like he let The Rock play a little bit. Because that one scene where The Rock tells Statham he's going to shove his teeth so far down his throat, he's going to have to stick a toothbrush up his butt to brush his teeth.
Right.
Statham breaks so genuinely.
Yeah.
It feels like just one of those moments where the director was like, make him laugh.
Yeah.
And The Rock did it.
And it's great. I mean, the strength of this franchise, and it's something that I think people take for granted, because a lot of people, let's tie this into this topic real quick. The Fast and the Furious franchise is still looked down upon by a lot of film snobs and a lot of people in general.
Very true.
What would you tell somebody who is like maybe on the fence? Like a lot of people, I think I've been posting about watching these on Facebook, and I think a lot of people have kind of come to the table and been like, wait, really? You are enjoying these movies? What would you tell somebody who is now coming to you with a, you know what, maybe, but sell me on this? What do you think it is about this franchise that really makes it special and has made us both really embrace it and people across the world as much as we have?
I'm going to say that you figured it out earlier. You said it earlier. There's no cynicism to it.
Yeah.
That this is not a franchise that is trying to dress itself up and be something it isn't and, you know, have the best of both worlds. It says to you very plainly, come on in. We're having a good time. You should have fun too. And that is what I think sells it, period. End of sentence. There's such a complete genuineness and honesty and sincerity about this series, just wanting to make you have a good time, that I couldn't possibly see anybody holding anything against it. And it's a fascinating thing to watch straight through, because you see it move from anthology. You literally see it move from anthology series to comic book series.
Yes.
And it just, you know, and it just lights itself on fire and doesn't let up. And what would you say?
I agree with you. I think the non-cynical nature of it is very refreshing. I would go a step further, because I think if there's anything, as I was saying earlier, I would fault the series with, is that these characters are unharmable superheroes and can take down anything at any time. I would like to see in the next couple, maybe break down that armor a little bit. But what has always, even as I'm rolling my eyes, as Vin Diesel literally survives a submarine explosion that has engulfed him without a scratch on him, beyond just the lack of cynicism and the full embracing of the ridiculous and awesome action, it's the family element. And this ensemble is superb. Like, it is great. I love the characters, which is not what I would have said at the beginning of watching this franchise. But seeing them work together and their interactions, it's a well-oiled machine by this point. And I love that. And that is, at the end of the day, the action is great, but I love seeing them interact with each other. I love their quips. I love the one-liners. The chemistry really, really works. And that's what takes it to the next level for me. And that's what I'd tell somebody. I'd say, look, you know, the franchise starts off weak, but it finds its footing about halfway through. And part of that is the characters, just embracing that ensemble and their love for each other and that genuine heart that this franchise has. But it's been a complete joy getting to go through them. I'm excited to go back to the beginning and kind of watch the ones I don't like in light of knowing where the franchise goes.
You know, I'm hoping that the ninth one, I'm going to pitch a title, because there's got to be a ninth one, because this had a bigger worldwide opening weekend than The Force Awakens. I want people to chew on that one.
Yeah.
That's how much people love this franchise. Okay. And I'm going to pitch for the ninth one, to call it either Find the Furious with a 9 in place of the IN.
Just give them a fine for all the damage they've done.
Right. Find the Furious. It's them racing to court before they get caught up on all of their speeding tickets. It's going to be a courtroom drama and reinvent the series to go forward.
Perfect. Was there another title you had, or was that the...
No. Find the Furious with a 9, or I'm now on the side of the courtroom drama, Find the Furious.
Perfect. Like So final ranking of the entire series. What do you say?
Oof. You know, I so desperately want to hold off on that, because when you come off of the high of seeing a movie in the theater, you got to give it time to know where to rank it. So I don't want to put the eighth one in a ranking right now. What I will say is that in the scheme of everything, I will give the two top spots. I will still give the two top spots to 3 and 5. And the rest is personal preference from that point forward. So that is my ultimate dodge. Is I'm giving it to 3 and 5, and 8's a worthy addition to the series. Where are you going to go?
I say I'm going to rank the entire series, and as you said, it's tough to rank 8 right now. Currently, I might put it above 7, but I want to watch 7 again. So what I'll say is I'll go 5, 6, 4, 7, 8, 1, 3, 2.
3's in the wrong position, but I see where you're reasoning things out there. I think two is forever going to be, to move it to a different analogy, Too Fast, Too Furious is always going to be my favorite band of all time as the Doors, but even I'm like, Soft Parade's really the album that the hardcore fans love, but I get it why people don't like it.
Yeah,
and it is. So Too Fast, Too Furious is like, if you really like all the other ones, you'll like this one.
Right. That one's fascinating to watch just from the standpoint of watch them stumble and try to figure out what this franchise is.
Yeah. I mean, you can't help but wonder, does Singleton deserve another shot because the parameters have changed?
Yeah.
Should they bring him back in to you know, to say, hey, look, here's the template now. What would you do?
And speaking of that, who do you want to see pick up the reins for the next one?
Christopher Nolan. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. That's a joke. I don't know. I mean, there's a part of me that always wants Lynn to come back because he's really the progenitor of what it is now. But that's not fair to him to be like, come back and do what I want you to do.
Sure.
I think it would be interesting to bring in. Wow. Ugh. I mean, that's a stumper, man. I can't, like, anywhere I go with it, I'm just too tempted to turn it into a joke. So I can't. I really struggle with it. Man, who would I like to? Who would you like to see?
Off the top of my head, maybe this is sacrilege, because he kind of established this genre. But it would be great to see George Miller take a swing at a Fast and Furious movie.
Sold. I'm totally sold on that idea.
That would be. I almost feel like he made the perfect action movie with Fury Road, and I almost don't want him to cross over. But at the same time, he invented this genre, or not invented it, but he pioneered it.
And then call it Fury of the Fast or something. Like that.
Make it a crossover. Bring Fury, Charlize Theron. Facing off with Furiosa.
This is what she does. Oh, okay. All these possibilities just opened right here, Sean.
Brilliant. Because this franchise is similar in a way to the Mission Impossible franchise, why not bring Brad Bird in and see what he could do with it? He's good with ensembles. He's good with that fun team element. That could be a lot of fun.
As much as I love to kick Mission Impossible 2 because it's not a good movie, like, I'd be more tempted to, if you're going to talk about Mission Impossible, I'd be more tempted to be like John Woo, you know, because John Woo seems to operate in this space. But at the same time, I've never seen anything where he could demonstrate the car chases that they did or that they do. Like, you know, like his stuff is all gunplay, whereas I'd want to see more. I mean, Christopher McQuarrie showed with Rogue Nation that he can really do thrilling road stuff.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that would be really something.
That would be cool, too.
And bring Tom Cruise in it, and they could have a foot race at some point.
So what do you think? Do anybody come to mind?
No.
That's it?
No, honestly, no, because the thing is, when they're talking about, you know, director for Fate of the Furious, I'd never picked F. Gary Gray, and he did fine with it. And
great.
I'd have never picked James Wan. He did fine with
it. Exactly.
You know, like,
so it's exciting to think where they could go with that. But all right, well, so final consensus, I'm on board with this franchise. I can't wait to see what happens next. I went from not liking it, pretty much hating it, to being completely sold. And like, I frankly might even just go and rewatch the whole series again because it's just such a delight. And it's action popcorn action cinema at its really, I want to say at its finest. Maybe that's a stretch, but it is a perfect example of just fun action cinema.
Yeah, completely agree.
So on that note, John, thank you so much for being a part of this. I'm thrilled we got to do this.
Thank you for having me, Sean. Seriously, it's been a pure joy to talk about these with you.
Likewise. And tell people, where else can they find you on the Nerd Party Network and elsewhere?
Well, you can find me on the Nerd Party Network, co-hosting Great Shot Kid with Mike Schindler, which is a show that looks at the non-Star Wars works of Star Wars creators. Also with Mike Schindler, you can find me over on the Trek FM Network doing Stage 9, which is what I said about Star Wars, but for Star Trek creators. You can find me back here on the Nerd Party right now, co-hosting Aggressive Negotiations with Matt Rushing. And you can find me co-hosting Words with Nerds, a free-form show of insanity with my pal Craig Sorrell. So that's where you can find me.
And I am hopefully going to be joining other nerd partiers as time goes on, but you can find, you know, I highly recommend checking out all these shows that John mentioned, Words with Nerds, the other nerd party shows. They're all great. You can find me on Twitter at @YeShondorman. And let us know what you think. I desperately want to talk about these movies. I sincerely adore them. So I want to hear everybody kind of come into the fold. What's your ranking of the series? What do you think? Do you like the earlier ones more with the street racing? Do you think it kind of devolved as it went into James Bond territory? I want to hear all about it. So check me out on at Yay Shondorman and follow at Join Nerd Party to keep up with all the fun stuff we're doing here. And on that note, John, thank you once again.
Thank you.
And we will catch you on the flip side.
Quarter mile at a time.
Quarter mile, I was going to say. I wanted to think, you beat me to it.